And our third talk, Hannah Goh, is a student from Azusa Pacific University, all the way from California. And she is doing research with Colleen Schreier, who's also with us. Actually, in the Department of Biology and Chemistry. Wow. So I'm looking forward to their talk on wholeness in healing, how neuroplasticity and faith work together for restoration.
So today, I'd like to talk about neuroplasticity and also about faith. Neuroplasticity helps maintain an individual's well-being and wholeness. Together with faith, which gives us the strength to endure suffering, healing can take place. So I will be covering the following topics: how the brain works, what neuroplasticity is, neuroplasticity's role in emotional healing, the relationship between suffering and healing, and how God overcomes the limits of neuroplasticity. So before we dive into neuroplasticity, we must understand how the brain works, and we can do so by picturing the brain as a community. Two key characteristics of a healthy and long-lasting community are the number and the strength of relationships. Unity and efficiency increase when members communicate with each other and build on previous relationships. So similarly, the brain is a community dependent on the connections of its members, the neurons, which are a type of brain cell. Although this is a very simplified illustration of how the brain works, it helps to explain synaptic connections well. Brain communication occurs through synaptic connections, in which chemical signals are transmitted from one neuron to the other. The connections can be either strengthened or weakened over time. And this is the mechanism behind neuroplasticity. Strong and numerous relationships via synaptic connections permit the brain to take in and retain more information. So another important aspect that helps us understand how the brain works is its organization. The brain is organized into distinct areas that work together to process and meet bodily demands. Neurons synapse in different locations, which allow the areas to communicate with each other. For example, the occipital lobe is the site that primarily processes what we see, while the Broca's area primarily produces speech. The word primarily is key here because the brain is a community of interconnecting neurons. It takes the interaction of several areas for a specific function, not just the action of one area. So connectomes, as pictured here, can help us visualize this, as they represent how neuronal pathways are connected spatially. The vast amount of neurons in the circuitry indicates the intricacy of the brain and that the parts of the brain communicate and work with each other in harmony. So now knowing all of this, we can finally ask, what is neuroplasticity? The best word that describes neuroplasticity is flexibility. Neuroplasticity is a brain process that responds to stimuli. It's a way the body adapts to the environment. It can be categorized into positive and negative neuroplasticity. Positive neuroplasticity occurs in response to stimuli such as exercise, healthy eating, and good sleeping habits. The results are more connections, stronger unions between neurons, and a larger brain. According to Vance and his group, the opposite is seen with negative neuroplasticity. Decreased neuronal stimulation reduces the connections between neurons, and this may cause neurons to atrophy or break down. For example, therapies such as radiation, endocrine, and chemotherapy produces negative neuroplasticity in breast cancer survivors. Evidence of this is seen in neuropsychological measures. So this table here depicts the results of a study examining how breast cancer affects cognitive functioning in Ethiopian women. Abeba and her team used the Mini Mental Status Exam, MMSE, to measure cognitive functioning. They found that the breast cancer group scored significantly lower than the control group, while other factors like education and age impact the score, it was still abundantly clear that chemotherapy and similar therapy treatments are associated with cognitive impairment, a sign of negative neuroplasticity. So note from now on, every time I mention neuroplasticity, I'm referring to the positive kind unless stated otherwise. So for instance, when a part of the brain is injured, neuroplasticity rewires the circuitry in the nervous system to accommodate. If someone loses a sense, the brain will take over the space dedicated for that area, for that particular sense, so that all the other senses will be heightened. So for example, visually impaired individuals are more sensitive to their olfactory environment and can detect odors more easily than normal individuals. So aside from injury, neuroplasticity is essential for the improvement of people's learning and skills. Elbert et al. Showed that when someone is learning a new musical instrument, the brain learns new motor skills and changes as a result. So the y-axis of the graph shows the amount of brain area dedicated to the left hand, which fingers the strings. It's not surprising that string musicians have a greater area and size compared to the controls. Controls gray, string players in black. And then the x-axis shows the age one started playing musical instruments. The younger the subjects were when they started playing, the more brain territory they had dedicated for the left hand. So with the basics of neuroplasticity in mind, let's explore how it influences emotional healing. And to ensure that we're on the same page, let's first define emotion. According to the American Psychological Association, emotions are, quote, conscious mental reactions subjectively experienced as strong feelings, usually directed toward a specific object and typically accompanied by physiological and behavioral changes in the body, end quote. Now, we can't talk about emotional health without considering physical health. They are so inextricably correlated with each other that it's sometimes difficult to know which one led to the other. For example, depression can cause distress to both emotional and physical health. An article in the Journal of Psychiatry and Neuroscience by Albert shows how depression can lead to pathophysiological disorders and increase the risk of cardiac and cerebrovascular diseases. In a more positive light, physical health can elevate emotional health. We know that exercise benefits our physical health, but we should also know that it reduces bad mood, anxiety, and depression. Moreover, positive emotions have beneficial impacts on poor health. A study by Tugate et al. Found that there were lower hospital readmission rates for cardiovascular patients that reported greater happiness for 90 days after being discharged. Thus, emotional healing has ties to physical healing. Let's now look at how the brain responds to positive and negative situations. If a positive event happens, the brain undergoes neuroplasticity so that nostalgia is experienced in the future. Nostalgia is a positive emotional state that generally benefits emotional health. Abeda et al. And Oba claimed that nostalgia improves self-esteem, leading to improved social confidence, and this decreases depression, loneliness, and contemplation about death. So according to Abeda and his team, quote, nostalgia moderated the relation between loneliness and negative social cognitive tendencies because of its positive association with social confidence, end quote. This means that nostalgia weakened the inverse relationship between loneliness and social confidence. Quote, however, social confidence does vary as a function of state nostalgia at higher levels of loneliness, such that lonely individuals who report stronger nostalgic feelings report less of a deficit in social confidence compared to lonely individuals who report weaker nostalgic feelings, end quote. In other words, stronger nostalgic feelings improve social confidence in individuals experiencing higher levels of loneliness. If a negative event happens, the brain will seek ways to cope as much as possible. According to Hunter and his team of researchers, Those who suffer from low self-esteem, abuse, and PTSD have a smaller hippocampus. As shown here. The hippocampus is a brain structure important for learning and memory. A smaller hippocampus is directly related to stronger cortisol stress responses, which suggest relative negative neuroplasticity. So on this graph, we can see the relationship of symptom severity in combat veterans with PTSD to the hippocampal volumes of their identical twin brothers who are not exposed to combat. The graph shows that the greater the PTSD severity is, the smaller the hippocampal volume. Moreover, the twin that didn't experience combat had a greater volume than the twin who did. Although the brain undergoes its own processes in response to events, an individual has the ability to encourage positive neuroplasticity through support and interventions as stated by Hunter and his group. Mindfulness training has been shown to positively affect neuroplasticity. One example is integrative body-mind training, IBMT, which focuses on being aware of the mind and body. Awareness of the body is achieved through posture exercises that relax the body, which stimulates concentration and awareness. The synergy of the body and mind involves the nervous system, and the result is a state of mindfulness. In the brain, the ventral posterior cingulate cortex, PCC, is the red part in the brain, is linked to self-awareness, cognition, and emotion. A study by Tang et al. Found that after 10 hours of IBMT, subjects experienced an increase in the right ventral PCC volume, which specifically showcases gray matter plasticity. In addition, a study by Dada and Newberg has noted that meditation results in a greater level of function in the frontal brain. Induced neuroplasticity plays a role in the development of resilience. Hunter and his group define resilience as the capacity to accomplish a successful outcome in the midst of difficulties. Resilience is particularly associated with brain areas like the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex. These areas assist in healthy coping. Tugate and his group suggest that resilience and positive emotions have a direct relationship. Resilient people have the ability to evoke positive emotions in themselves and loved ones through humor and cheerful thinking. We can see that through the development of resilience, there is emotional healing. A broader conclusion is that neuroplasticity is part of the healing response to suffering. Suffering highlights the fact that the world is imperfect and broken, as described in Romans 5:12. Quote, therefore, just as sin came into the world through one man, and death through sin, and so death spread to all men because all sinned, end quote. There are many views on why suffering exists, but it's clear that it's a result of sin. Paul Schreier states that we are relational beings, and because of that, sin is also relational. We can see the effects of sins in polluted environments, diseases, and broken relationships. Thus, sin must have ties to healing. When you recognize that we're sinful and in need of God's grace, we're able to endure suffering due to a shift in mindset. Sin inherently separates us from God, and acknowledging it changes the course of our lives. We not only seek healing for the sake of ourselves, but we also seek restoration with God. However, a sick person's own sin is not always the cause of the illness. Jesus alluded to this when he healed a blind man in John 9. In verse 2, he said that, quote, it was not that this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him, end quote. In spite of living in a broken world, the suffering we face always has a purpose, in that we can experience God's goodness and love through it. Suffering can bring post-traumatic growth. Maitlis describes this as, quote, the transformative positive change that can occur as a result of a struggle with great adversity, end quote. A people group that displays this phenomenon well are refugees. They have already experienced psychological traumas like losing their home, their social environment, and assurance of how the world functions. Yet they face even more challenges when they arrive at a safe country. And one of them is difficulties in job seeking. Worley and her team found that these difficulties empowered refugees to grow in self-confidence and reevaluate what's important to them. A simple model that describes the process that refugees probably went through is shown here. So emotional regulation and sense making enabled by relational support are key to positive outcomes. Relational support helps with regulating difficult emotions and distress that comes from trauma. And through sense making, which is a process of cognitive restructuring, they were able to see their experiences in a positive light. Thus, suffering can nurture neuroplasticity for emotional healing. We know that neuroplasticity has much to offer, but it cannot offer restoration to its fullest capacity. While emotional health is a personal and internal matter, it still relies on the external, like exercise, sleep, and community, to nourish it. Even then, these cannot compare to the power of spirituality and faith. Lekak's study noted that prayer can positively affect one's brain so that memory is protected even as one ages. The table illustrates the effects of prayer on average change in episodic memory from baseline. Possible confounding variables like the subject's demographic and health characteristics were accounted for. I'm just going to be focusing on prayer as bracketed in red. The increase in memory from baseline value in those who prayed is shown by the generalized estimated equations model of 0.50. The asterisk denotes that the p-value is less than 0.05, which demonstrates that the data is statistically significant at this level. Prayer is communicating with God. Our relationship with God allows us to lean on Him, find rest, and inch closer to the promised peace. Peace is the antithesis to suffering. The Hebrew word for peace is shalom, which means wholeness and completeness. It's the exact opposite of what suffering highlights, sin and brokenness. So even when our body and mind succumb to ailments, we can transcend above them through the peace Jesus gives, as stated in John 14:27. When an individual chooses to accept peace in the midst of their suffering, a rich inner life rooted in faith is revealed. It's faith which gives us peace, because faith in God allows us to endure the stresses of life. And though faith is tested in suffering, it presents us with hope. In Romans 8:23-25, quote, "We ourselves groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for adoptions of sons, the redemption of our bodies. If we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience," end quote. Because of God's faithfulness, we can look forward with hope to a better future, as we will be fully redeemed and healed in heaven. Altogether, communion with God impacts every aspect of ourselves, including our emotional health. When we actively spend time with God, we build endurance and resilience in the midst of suffering. This indicates positive neuroplasticity. Moreover, the peace and joy that flourishes in our hearts will have external manifestations in our physical bodies. Emotional and physical healing can take place as we change from the inside out. So to recap, each time we experience a positive or negative stimulus, the brain responds via neuroplasticity. The neurons work together as a community to execute a response for the situation at hand and bring physical changes into neuronal connections. Neuroplasticity can be enhanced through our choices, especially during suffering. We can actively and intentionally seek God, the healer, in faith. He provides peace and inner healing, which transcends above the limitations of neuroplasticity. It's only in Him where we can experience the full extent of hope and peace that comes from having faith. Thank you.
Has this been tested out with elderly people with dementia?
I'm not sure. I haven't. When I did my research, I didn't come across anything, but I know that neuroplasticity, as you grow older, it becomes a little bit limited because you're not like a sponge when you're younger. But I know that experts say that learning new skills like writing with your non-dominant hand or learning to play a new instrument can definitely help. So I don't know exactly how like neuroplasticity work can help people with dementia, but definitely there should be some benefits at least.
Yeah. Okay, question here. So the spirituality and psychological literature, and even if you look, you know, in the ancient world, folk wisdom has long known that humans can change in their thinking and their emotions and their well-being. So now that we know some of the neurological correlates of what happens in that change, I'm just wondering if that has any clinical, practical significance.
Well, I did know that when you tap into somebody's spirituality, John Swinton goes, and I've mentioned this in another talk, that it's called fixed spirituality. And so it brings more healing than just the surface kind of spirituality that a lot of counselors do, which John Swinton calls thin spirituality. So tapping into those scriptures, hymns, spirituals, you know, or something like that does bring about more healing, helps people get out of depression and things like that.
Right,
but that's
not.
Folks, we're not taping. Oh, sorry. Give a quick summary of what you just
said. Just thick spirituality tapping into the Christian foundations helps bring healing. So,
and I will put it in his microphone.
But that doesn't address the issue of knowing the neural correlates of how that's happening. That doesn't change anything.
So they.
Okay.
So she's saying it doesn't address the scientific, like what's going on in the brain. Are there different connections that are going on in response to that? I don't know if some people are getting into that and doing some of that research, like Newberg and stuff like that. But
it's always going to be correlative.
Right. It's going to see what the outcome is. So like if somebody has a broken leg and they're starting to walk, you're going to assume that it's healing.
Right. Yeah, but we'll be doing the same thing that we've been doing for thousands of years. So knowing now that we've got different labels to put on it, it's still just doing the same thing but with different labels.
So she's saying that we've been doing the same thing for years and years and years, and now we're just putting different labels on. So now we're able to add usually the physical aspect of why we're seeing. So yeah, absolutely.
I think what we're seeing is this is a newer area, and so that we have more questions about mechanisms than we're yet able to answer. But we have another question.
Well, I don't know if it's a question or more of a comment, but I found what you said about the integrative mind-body training really interesting. And now I'm thinking about, you know, like the main goal of dance therapy is the mind-body synchrony. So that connection between mind and body. So I'm thinking it'd be very interesting to do some sort of comparison study between, you know, maybe the creative arts approaches mm-hmm. with more of a integrative mind-body training. That sounds like a bit more specific. Yeah. So I just think it's really interesting that you brought that up, and I definitely want to look into it more. So. Yeah, very interesting.
Thank you. So, it was very nice to hear that. I have a question about there's a slide showing like prayers works. I'm wondering is there any evidence showing like how is it different with meditation?
So there's, when I did research, there's multiple studies that show that meditation can help with like episodic memory. But for this study in particular, it said that meditation did not have an effect on episodic memory. So I guess it's like, you'll have to see more studies. You have to wait to see more studies come about to see like, to actually gain a conclusion on what, because this is just one study. And so another study could be like, prayer doesn't have an effect. So I guess we just have to like do more research and see. But I think meditation does have an effect.
Did they mention anything like why meditation doesn't work in this research, or no, they didn't mention anything?
Because they did, this study focused specifically on like, it's like an experiment trial. So like they had a bunch of like people and they grouped them up and they went like they went through prayer, meditation, and they had some testing afterwards done to see if there was like, there's like testing on like the first day zero and then testing after they underwent through this treatment. And for some reason, the results, when they compared the baseline to like the end of the trial, there was no significant difference. So it's just this study said that meditation doesn't have much results.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, this is just a comment. I'm aware that studies have shown one of the best predictors of preventing Alzheimer's is if you know more than one language. And it has no side effects also.
Wow.
And actually, in the connection here about also with us being relational creatures that God has made us, you know, the more languages you know, the more people you relate to.
That's true.
But anyway, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. What's the method? Did you measure pyramid?
Oh,
which
I didn't.
Method?
Are you asking if I measured it?
Yeah.
How? No, it was someone else. They did like statistics.
Okay.
Some of which I didn't understand.
Okay. Okay. It's not like an imaging study or which
no.
kind of just, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's behavior.
No, it's like they did tests, like tests that studied, that tested their memory. So it's not like, it's like hard quantitative data. And then they converted it through equations to this.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to our community.